You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everyone.
Happy hump day. Hope you're staying warm out there. It remains sub-zero in most places in Wisconsin. Hi, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's not only hump day Wednesday, it is Wisconsin Wednesday here on The Maggie Dawn Show. We got a stacked show for you today, all focused on Wisconsin. I'm really excited for it. And you're going to want to hang on for all 2 hours of this program, ladies and gentlemen, because to close out the show, we're going to be joined by Representative Congressman Mark Pocan. He'll be discussing the Elon Act, because I don't think anybody voted for a billionaire overlord. Maybe just me, but yeah, didn't actually think Elon Musk's name was on the ballot this past November. At the top of the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to have State Senator Sarah Kieski, Senate District 14, joining us. She's one of those new Democratic senators that have joined our state legislature. Can't wait to get Sarah on, get to know her a little better and what her legislative priorities are, especially given the governor's budget address last night, which we're going to get to in just a moment. At the bottom of this hour, I'm going to be talking about one of my most favorite Wisconsin traditions. You know it, folks. If it's gosh darn cold outside in the dead of February, it must be the Birkebeiner, which is always loads of fun. We're going to be joined by Greg Gunderson from our affiliate WCQM in Park Falls to talk all about the Berkey, as we all affectionately call it. Can't wait to have that discussion. But first, politics. I'm so happy to be joined for a special Wisconsin Wednesday edition of The State Slate with Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's very own political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. Always wonderful to join you on The Maggie Dawn Show.
Is that a disco ball in your background, Dan? I have to ask.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got a built-in at our house here in on the west side of Milwaukee, and we've got a bunch of plants and then a disco ball over it.
A disco ball, because it's always a party at the Recombobulation Area. Folks, if you want to see Dan and I, and specifically Dan's disco ball, remember, you can always watch The Maggie Dawn Show and all of our fine programming at Civic Media's YouTube site. Also, you can watch on X, Instagram, and Facebook at Maggie Dawn Show and check us out and Dan's disco ball there. Let's jump right into it. Dan, what was the big takeaways from the, the big takeaways from the governor's budget address last evening?
Yeah, so it was a busy day in state politics in Wisconsin yesterday. We had the spring primary, the spring election primary, and we can talk about some of those results. But I was also at the governor's budget address last night in Madison. Went to attend that one in person, which I had not done for this type of speech before. So it was fun to kind of be there to see the reactions from the Republicans and the Democrats in the legislature, standing up when Evers would say something on one side of the aisle and just sitting there and rolling their eyes on the other side as he goes through it. But, you know, I think we can talk about a couple different things with the speech, but I felt like on style, it was kind of a flat speech. It felt like Evers was rushing through it at points. I don't think the style points are necessarily Evers' strength, as a politician, as a speaker. But there were a number of very interesting proposals. You know, we saw a couple of them come out in the days prior to the budget address, an overhaul of the Department of Corrections. You know, he had mentioned in the State of the State speech that wanting to put $300 million towards mental health in the schools. And he talked about this budget in particular. Kind of the headline item from it is what he was characterizing as the most pro-kid budget in Wisconsin history. So a lot of investments in education, a lot on, you know, talking about just kind of like safety and water quality was a big piece of this as well. And you know, childcare was another one that, you know, that was one of the things that in the last budget, Republicans voted it out of the budget in a joint finance committee hearing that happened at 2:30 in the morning. So will they be more willing to discuss these types of proposals this time? Remains to be seen.
It seems maybe next time they want to vote against our kids, they should do it in the middle of the day, in the bright light of day, so that we all know what exactly is going on. Sorry for interrupting, Dan.
Yeah. You know, this is the way the Republican-controlled state legislature likes to operate. They like to have those votes in the middle of the night under so they
no one pay attention to what we're doing
next morning. Yes,
exactly. Big announcements this week, especially in this area of prison reform. I did, and I'm not going to call it reform, rehabilitation. So many of our facilities are very old. There has been crises after crises. I believe one of the, I forget what they call them, the guys that run the prisons, was actually arrested this year for basically extreme negligence, as a number of people that were incarcerated at his facility, a state facility, died. I was a bit surprised by it. Typically, it's not a big political winner to suggest big spending, $500 million in the governor's case, for these sorts of improvements to your system of incarceration. What to your mind, Dan, has been the response thus far? It's certainly a critical issue, not just here in Wisconsin, but everywhere in the country. There are major overcrowding issues, major issues getting people the mental health treatment they need, suicides in these facilities. Dan, what's your take?
Yeah, there's been some real problems at Department of Corrections over the last few years. And I think it is, you know, it seems overdue, perhaps, in certain instances, for this overhaul being proposed. And as part of this, it proposes closing the Green Bay facility by 2029. And so I know that there was the the mayor of the village of Alloway, who was also a Republican who ran for assembly last fall. He was a proponent of this plan, and he's long been advocating for closing this very outdated prison in Green Bay. So I think that, you know, is one of the major items there. And like you said, it's not like an especially flashy political item to have as a headline for the budget, but it does seem like, you know, one of those things that in one way or another, Wisconsin is going to have to address.
This is not an if, it is a but when. Having been in most of our state prisons at some point in time, not as an inmate, everyone, please don't start joking, but as an attorney, giving counsel to people while I was working with the Wisconsin Innocence Project when I was in law school, some of these facilities are downright shocking. Green Bay was certainly one of the most shocking ones. It's just the facilities are so outdated. We have stretched capacities to their absolute maximum. Again, to me, this is a question of not if, but when. And frankly, would Republicans and taxpayers want to be more long-term savvy with the money? In other words, in my mind, don't be, you know, penny wise and pound foolish. These lawsuits and the liabilities that are accruing related to the deaths of individuals in custody are racking up. This is incredibly expensive. And it only, having, you know, again, litigated on behalf of Milwaukee County, it only takes a handful of these big ticket cases where you're in 6-7 figures a few times and you're at a $500 million. So again, my view, not if, but when, but not sexy, you know, Tony Evers style. Yeah, I was glad I had a sufficient amount of caffeine when I was watching yesterday evening. But Evers, as you said, Dan, never known for the delivery. known for just being a, sort of an honest broker, regular guy. And it seemed the speech overall seemed pretty technical. It had a lot of policy detail in there that he was getting through. Very Evers-esque. In terms of reading the tea leaves here, Dan, on whether or not this portends a likely run again from Tony Evers, or maybe that he's hanging up the cleats, what's your prognosticating having heard this, the budget proposal yesterday?
Yeah, that's an, you know, seems to be hanging over all of this, what Evers is going to do in 2026. And he has said in the past that he is not going to make this decision until after the budget process. So, you know, it does seem like there's some certain connections to what's happening there. But I think if you really step back and take a look at this as a big picture, it doesn't seem like the type of budget that would be, you know, his last as governor, and it's last, you know, in year seven of his time as governor. Maybe he would have, you know, if this were going to be his last one, maybe he really digs in and says, hey, I'm going to veto the budget if it doesn't include Medicaid expansion. I'm going to veto the budget if it doesn't include the funding for K-12 education or the UW schools that we're looking for. It didn't really seem to take that type of approach. And I think, you know, the Republican response to every budget that Evers has proposed in this era of divided government is just to chuck the whole thing immediately as soon as it gets to the Joint Finance Committee, and then kind of rebuild the entire budget around the Republican priorities. So there were a couple things that, you know, Republicans were saying, hey, that was our idea. You know, they kind of wanted credit for it. One of the things was eliminating taxes on tips. And that was, you know, of course, one of the things that President Trump talked about in his campaign last year as well. So, you know, that was part of it. You know, so, but I do think there's a lot here that is are pretty interesting proposals. There's another one on requiring audits of health insurers. And I think that was one of the ones that wasn't in the excerpts before. So I think that was kind of like the surprise there. He said, I want Wisconsin to become the first state in America to start auditing insurance companies over denying healthcare claims. I think that is a pretty interesting approach there. And again, it's not your sexy political topic. It is a little bit more in the weeds, but I think this is, you know, that's the approach that the Evers administration often takes on these types of things.
You mean the DOGE for health insurers? Man, that would be kind of interesting. The tax on tips, just very briefly before we go to break, and we're going to keep going with Dan Schaefer. It's the State Slate on Wednesday, special edition with Dan Schaefer. We're going to continue with Dan after these brief messages. But I just wanted to say this when it comes to taxing tips and the question of eliminating it. What a stupid half measure. First of all, restaurant workers don't get paid enough. How about we solve the minimum wage problem? Not sort of, I feel like it's like drippings to the poor while the kings feast. Like what? We need billionaire tax cuts, but oh, well, we'll appease people by not taxing tips. How about we actually have a living minimum wage? If you're willing to work 40 to 50 hours a week, you will not go hungry and you will have a roof over your head. Maybe that, huh? I'm going to pat my hair back out. It might be lighting up a little bit on fire. We're going to come back with Dan Schaefer, creator of The Recombobulation and our political editor, right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, my name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Dan, before we get into more politics, Dan Schaefer, my special guest this afternoon, he usually joins me Tuesdays at 2:30 for the State Slate and Dan Schaefer, but today it's Wisconsin Wednesday. We had the budget address, so we're doing it today. Before we get back to the politics, how excited are you, Dan, that spring training is well underway? Well underway.
It's such a great, it's hope, right? It's yes, having the fact that there is
will
spring
arrive.
Training out there. And a day like today, there where it's sub-zero around the state and frigid here in Milwaukee, it's, you know, it's nice to be able to think ahead to, you know, getting down to the ballpark in a couple of months here.
I can tell you what I'm going to be doing this Saturday, and that is watching the Brewers play the Cincinnati Reds. And if I can't get it on TV, because who knows what the heck network app or whatever it's on, I will listen to it on one of Civic Media's affiliates. We're going to have it on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, and WBZH in Hayward. So if you're a big Brewers fan like me, you can check that out. Their first spring training game coming up this Saturday. What fun. My dad, as you well know, big baseball player since he was basically old enough to walk. And though the man is now into his 80s, he still will yearn for pitcher and catcher reporting in about mid-February because it was so ingrained into his biological annual calendar clock. So, Dad, if you're listening, take heart, my friends. The game starts on Saturday. Sorry for the digression, Dan, but I just it's exciting. It's coming up.
It's a good reminder to me. I play softball around Milwaukee. It's a reminder to me. I gotta find my team this year. I gotta get things going for softball. So
listen, if you need a sub every once in a while, Dan, I'm on at least one other team, but I'm always willing to, you know, shag a few balls in the outfield. Mean first base, used to play third, but maybe not so quick anymore. And I can park one out into left fairly well. My problem is the early swing. But again, substituting, always here to help.
There you go.
We got two other things I want to get to with you, Dan, this afternoon. First are the primary results from the superintendent of public instruction race, contested primary, kind of a novelty. Tell me what the results were and what you're seeing from those results.
Yeah, so that was, you know, of all of the races happening across the state for the spring primary, there were a number of referenda, some local offices, mayor, common council, county executive, different places around the state. But the one that was on the ballot statewide was the race for state superintendent. And incumbent Jill Underley advanced to the general election, as expected, with 38% of the vote. And Brittany Kinzer, who is the kind of a Republican-backed candidate, was a former charter school executive and is now an education consultant. She was the other of the two to advance to the general election. She ended up with about 35% of the vote. And then Jeff Wright, the superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, was third with 27% of the vote. So it's going to be Underley, who is endorsed by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, going against Brittany Kinzer, who is backed by the Republican Party of Wisconsin. So, you know, this is once again, much like the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, it is this nonpartisan in name only general election. I thought there would, you know, it could have been kind of an interesting race if you had just Underley and Wright. You know, just and mm-hmm. once you remove kind of like the ideological, you know, the letter next to your name type of deal. Sometimes I find those a little bit more interesting of debates. But, you know, we're going to have your typical right versus left in this one. And I really do think that there is a chance for Brittany Kinzer to advance and to win this election. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the support that she was able to build. She was a very late entry into that race, but she's raised a ton of money. She's raised three times the amount of any of the other challengers in this race. And obviously the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is very focused on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race as well. And so, you know, it seems like there is some just kind of general frustration with Underley. She's an incumbent that only got 38% of the vote in a primary, you know, but at the same time, you know, would the people who voted for Jeff Wright, who is more of who leans further to the left on many issues, you know, would his supporters turn right around and vote for Underley? I think that is
they had damn well better. Let me be really clear here. You have basically you're electing a fox to watch the hen house in Brittany Kinzer. I mean, the idea that you would have a charter school exec who is now some sort of vague notion of an educational consultant. I mean, what the hell even is that? But that to me, one of the great crises in our public education system is a funding and outcomes crisis, right? How do we continue to adequately fund schools and respond to the very human, very natural question that I hear from so many people when it comes to any public school system is, Well, if we're spending more money, are the outcomes improving? That leaves out all of the nuances, the challenges of kids' mental health issues, generalized health care, all of these things. But at base, someone who does not have first and foremost in their agenda, how do we have adequate funding for public schools and how do we help improve outcomes and having the ability to talk very plainly about those things? I don't trust Brittany Kinzer as far as I can throw her when it comes to that, because if you haven't run a public school system, it's just a massive undertaking and somewhat, again, leaning right at a time when Donald Trump is going to try to dismantle all of the federal grant systems that funnel through the federal Department of Education into local school districts. So, to me, seems like an absolutely horrifying idea for anyone that has a child anywhere in any public school system in the state, and especially if your child happens to need an individualized education program because they have either behavioral, mental health, or other learning needs. Shocking and scary. Dan, we've got just under a minute left. I wanted you to give me your hot take on Brad Schimmel, candidate for the Supreme Court, sitting down with former Judge Derek Mosley at Marquette University. It was interesting.
I was able to attend this one. It's less of an interview and more of just kind of a get to know you type of public event. They're having another one with Susan Crawford in the coming weeks as well. But I think Schimmel, just more generally, it was just talking a lot about his background and talking about, just kind of his biography. And then when it was opened up to audience questions, that's when he did kind of struggle with a couple questions, notably one on reproductive rights. And he also had this kind of strange comment. I'd be curious your thoughts on where he talked about, just the separation of powers and said the judicial branch was intended to be the weakest of the three.
Dan, we're going to leave that hangout there because I'm going to pick up that topic tomorrow with my special guest host, Tom Paulswitz. Keep it locked, everybody. We got a special edition of Over the Hump and Trump. We talk Berkey after these brief messages. Welcome, everyone. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've been listening since the first of the year, usually at the very bottom, the last half hour, the bottom of the hour in this show on Wednesdays, I do a little segment called Over the Hump and Trump, because one, it's Wednesday, and two, we all need to get over Trump and talk about something else for a little while. It is a segment that is meant to connect us, share the things that we love, all experience some apolitical joy, hopefully together. Today, we're taking that segment right now at a special time, and I'm joined by my colleague at Civic Media, Greg Gunderson, avid outdoorsman. He's coming to us from WCQM Park Falls to talk about the amazing Birkebeiner cross-country ski race, the Wisconsin tradition extraordinaire. Welcome, Greg. Thanks for making time.
Thank you so much for having me, Meg. I appreciate the opportunity.
So for the city slickers who may be listening, and I count myself lovingly amongst your number, though I would also like to count myself an avid outdoors woman, tell us what the Birkebeiner is. It is having its 50th anniversary. So amazing. What is it? Why is it such a big freaking deal here in Wisconsin?
Well, for a couple of reasons, Maggie, the Birkebeiner in its current form is a ski race. That's the shortest, simplest answer. It's a really long ski race, and it
really
is a
long,
globally popular ski race. As with anything, if you're going to do it to the extreme, you're going to attract attention. You're going to attract a global audience full of people who solely exist to challenge themselves in those weird ways that happen when you leave humans alone for too long on the planet.
Yes.
They come up with things like 50-mile ski races and things like that. But if you want to actually answer the question of what it is or where it came from, it was actually a baby skiing down a mountain in a war, which I know, just zoom back.
I did not know that. Tell me more.
very quickly, and I've got a brief version of this. During the 1200s, there was a civil war happening in Norway, and there was a group called the Baglers, and the idea was they wanted to stop this young prince from succeeding in becoming king. That prince was named Håkon Håkonsson. A couple of the warriors who were tasked with protecting Håkon were aware that, hey, they're coming to get this baby. Like, it's a baby, but they don't care. They're coming for him. So we need to get out of here. What's the fastest way? If you're at the top of a Norwegian mountain, I don't mean to stereotype, but what's your fastest way out of anywhere? A pair of skis is going to be an option on the list. So that's actually what they did. A pair of warriors took a baby and skied across mountains. And here's the fun part. Birkebeiner. That refers to birch bark. They wore birch bark leggings. Their clothes. Their clothes were made out of tree bark. And that's the kind of material and equipment they had to save this baby, which they did. They saved him. He goes on to unify Norway, ending the war that almost got him killed as a baby. And so a few years later, as in 200 years later, people were like, hey, we should commemorate something that cool. And it's steadily turned into this global network of races. I think there's something like 7 of them across the globe that happen all over the place. Continents.
Wow. Basically. Listen, I thought getting my pair of Salomon, like custom fitted cross country skis back in like the second grade was a big deal. I also had to get like adult size skis because I was freakishly tall back then. So I digress. Nothing like a baby going 50 miles on a pair of skis with some birch pants. I'm never going to look at a birch tree the same again, Greg. I got to tell you.
There's a lot more party atmosphere involved these days, Maggie, than I think probably was before, back when they were saving lives. But nowadays, what happens is basically you've got two cities in northern Wisconsin, or two very small towns, one would say. You've got Cable and you've got Hayward. And Cable is basically the starting point. Hayward is basically the ending point. You've got 50 kilometers or more, depending on the race. And people are starting all the way up at this elevated spot and actually finishing their race in the main street of Hayward, Wisconsin. That's where the finish line is, actually just a couple blocks from the offices of one of our affiliate stations there in Hayward, WBZH, where we'll physically be on Saturday watching people just zooming right by us on their skis in the middle of downtown Hayward. I mean,
drinking a hot toddy. I mean, you got to have the adult beverages. Like, this is in Wisconsin. It's not just the skiing and the outdoorsmanship of it all. It's also, you know, the drinking part. Hey, Gray, would you mind? We got Jim from Brookfield. He does the Berkey every year. Jim, say hi to Gray for me. Tell us how much you love the Berkey. Are you doing it this year? Are you excited for it?
Yes, I am doing it. I have full Berkey fever. I've been going up there 28 years. I've skied over 20 of them, some quarter opens as well. And I just want to say thank you both. Hello to both. And thank you for talking about this statewide and civic media, because after going up there several years, I've noticed that anybody south of Highway 10 in the state of Wisconsin doesn't know much about it. North of Highway 10, it's a big deal. But in the Milwaukee area, southeast Wisconsin, I'm like, hey, I'm going up to do the Berkey. People kind of
look at you like, what?
Say, what? Yeah. So anyway, thank you for the exposure. It is a big deal. And it's not just for the skiers. My kids, when they were little, they did the Barney Berkey. That's a little kids race. That's the Thursday before. It was great. Friends have come up. We cook warm meals. Of course, afterwards, we have good food and drink. It's just a fun weekend. And from a skier's point of view, I can just say there's nothing like hitting Lake Hayward at the end where it's level. It does seem to go on
Thank
forever,
God.
But you see the big musky fish, you know, to your left as you're coming up behind the supermarket. You hit Main Street, there's the cowbells, the torch. It's nothing like it, Megan, and for the audience, it's one of the best experiences, you know, in my life. And when I did my 20th, you have a big 20 on your bib, and everybody's cheering and calling your name.
Aww.
It's just remarkable and a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks so much, Jim. I love sharing the stories. I got exposed to the Birkebeiner. I've never raced it myself. Maybe that'll be something like for my 50th birthday, like make a point, because my birthday is actually coming up. It usually coincides with the Birkebeiner. So that is always kind of fun. So maybe I'll make it like life goal to do it when I turn 50. But I was exposed to it because my best friend's dad skied it a few times, and my family was a cross-country skiing family. And let me tell you, he showed me his toes one year after the race. Oh, Lordy, put them dogs away. Bloody lost a couple toenails. I mean, great. Tell folks, this is quite an athletic endeavor, is it not?
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the best ways to highlight how important it is and how extreme it is that a lot of people know that last year, the Northwoods of Wisconsin received disaster relief loans because the lack of snow impacted businesses to that degree. Right. There was no snow in the Northwoods last year, which not zero. I don't like absolutes, but you get my point. It wasn't very cold up here. They actually brought in, bought, moved in, begged, borrowed, and stole enough snow moving and, snow generation equipment. That's the word.
Yes.
They made enough snow to create a loop trail that was, I think, several miles long. I don't know if we still got Jim, maybe he could confirm exactly the mileage on that trail, but it was huge. They were able to replicate a 50K race with an abbreviated loop trail by making the snow themselves. So if you want to talk about the dedication, when it wasn't going to happen because Mother Nature canceled it, they said, nope, humans
nope,
are going
we're
to make
doing
it
this.
Yep.
We're going to do the people way. I remember logging that last year, like, oh my gosh, they have to make snow for the Birkebeiner. Like, this is a real thing. I wanted to also cue in and ask you, Gray, not just about the athleticism of the event, but does it draw people from all over the United States, globally? Are you seeing all kinds of folks there? And listen, if you are from Southwestern or Southeastern Wisconsin and you have never had the privilege of going up to the Birkebeiner, put it on the bucket list. It is really something to experience. It's so amazing. Such a sense of shared joy. So first question to you, Gray. Where are the contestants coming from? Do you need only sign up? Do you have to qualify for it? Is it like the Boston Marathon?
So there's actually a pretty friendly application process for something as well attended as it is. And it is well attended. There were estimated over 12,000 participants last year. For perspective, the town of Hayward has permanent residents below 2,500 in the last census.
It's tiny.
Yeah, and that's the participants. I'm not talking spectators. That's how many skiers there were last year. So keeping that in mind, they're coming from all over the entire country. I mean, I think there are a couple similar events that are a little more accessible if you're from the entire West Coast or anything like that. But for example, last year, two of the featured participants were the first gold medal winners on the U.S. women's cross-country skiing team, Olympic team. They were the first gold medal winners in that event, and they were there, and go figure, one of them won it last year at the Birkebeiner. But who else expected anything different when you've got those kinds of people up there? But what really blows my mind, Maggie, about the event is that there's a certain tone to it, and there's no political nature to the event. In fact, I think politics are shed at the door by most people involved, which is admirable. But I wanted to touch on the fact that the Birkebeiner, those birch bark leggings, that was a derogatory term. That was a term not used by the people who did the skiing. It was by the people who they beat in the war, the sour grapes. That was kind of the flavor of the sour grapes after that Civil War, was those darn Birkebeiners, those darn birch bark wearing barbarians. And now, this long later, that's what we celebrate. We celebrate the tone of it, what made it unique, what made us unique, what we were able to draw from it and keep true in the Northwoods. And I think that's part of why it found its home here, because there's a little bit of a singularity here, but there's the opportunity to ski. So there was the opportunity for solidarity too.
I feel that. And I think that the idea of the perseverance, resilience, toughness of Wisconsinites, especially folks that live in the northern climes, it is definitely a rallying cry and certainly reflected in this origin story that I never knew about the Birkebeiner. So thank you, Gray. Tell us a little bit more about some of the different events. It's not just the skiing event. We've heard that there's a shorter course for adults. There's also a kids course. What else is going on up in Hayward?
Actually, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, it'd be pretty easy to imagine what kind of business discounts and specials that are running. But imagine, Maggie, one of the best ways to say it is imagine what Black Friday used to be. You remember when people like actually used to have something to fight over on Black Friday? Like people used to die in Black Friday events because there were deals that would like cause crowd crushes. It's not that extreme, but
No one's dying, right?
Oh no. It's a sign of something, good or bad, I don't know. but in Hayward, it's that level of enthusiasm, not mania, but enthusiasm. Forgive me, a bit tough to find the word. There is that level of excitement. And I love it because you can't find that level of happiness anywhere but at a wedding. You know, you're at a wedding and everybody knows there's no sadness here. That's kind of what the Berkey is like. Everybody is there. Everybody can trust that we're all there for the same reason. And Does it mean that you know everybody? No, there's like 30,000 people in town. But you know that everybody just cares about skiing and that you've got a common interest with everybody in town. How often can you be surrounded by 30,000 people and know that you have a common interest with all of them and it's not a political rally? I think that is like a unique
baseball games. Baseball games, Gray. I love me some baseball games. Concerts, Gray. Love me an outdoor Alpine Valley
I didn't
festival
think about that very hard.
Yes, that's all right. That's what I'm here for. It's a team effort. Folks, if you're just tuning in, I got Gray Gunderson coming to this, The Maggie Dawn Show, and to each and every one of you from WCQM and Park Falls. We're talking all things Birkebeiner. It is celebrating its 50th anniversary. Folks have been skiing 50 miles for 50 years in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. It is a sight to behold, and it is today's installment of Over the Hump and Trump, a segment that we bring to you usually at 3:30 every Wednesday. Today at a special time because we've got a special guest at 3:30. And in that segment, we try to have some of what Gray's describing here, these shared moments of joy, connection to one another in a way that is completely apolitical. Gray, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about winter headgear and the fashions of the Birkebeiner, because, oh, that is good fun as well. I also want to talk to you about some of the great non-winter things that we can do in Wisconsin's beautiful Northwoods woods and our state parks, because there's so much good going on in Wisconsin. Maybe we'll share a story or two. So we're going to take care of a little bit of business. Maybe I'll tell you about the first time I did a hell of a long cross-country skiing trip with my folks. I made it, but there was maybe a little petering out a few miles in. We'll talk about all that and more with our special guest on this installment of Over the Hump and Trump with Gray Gunderson. My name is Maggie Dawn, the host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. And Jim from Brookfield, thank you. He said the man-made loop last year was 10 kilometers or 6.2 miles. Thank you, Jim. Back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Berkey fever, got me here as a beaver, got me waiting for winter, got me praying for snow. Berkey fever, I'm a true believer, just get me to the starlight, I'll be ready to go.
If it is winter in Wisconsin and it's late February, it is the Birkebeiner, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And in this half hour, a special edition of Over the Hump and Trump, we're talking all things Birkebeiner, celebrating its 50th or 51st year, depending on who you ask, up in Hayward, Wisconsin. I'm joined this afternoon by Gray Gunderson, coming to you and I from WCQM in Park Falls. Thanks so much, Gray, for making time. So tell us about the 50th, 51st year controversy, if you will.
I think there's pretty good agreement that it is indeed the 51st, but there's kind of an asterisk. There's, you know, when you can hear a capital letter in people's speech, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that. It's like I heard that asterisk there. You clearly think that last year didn't count, because to be fair, last year almost didn't happen. Up until early February, the talk was, will there be a Berkey? And when finally it was announced that yes, there would be, then there was another question, okay, what version of it? And it was several days later that finally there was an announcement. But I will say, I think there's probably pretty a good agreement, and all the official documentation is that this is the 51st, but I will entertain arguments. I won't shut you down if you want to tell me it's the 51st. I'm with you. I respect your right to think so, but I do disagree with you. It's 51.
It's 51. Thank you, Dave from New Berlin, Carl from Eau Claire, and all the folks on the text line giving the Berkey some love and fact-checking me when I get things wrong. It is appreciated. Are you a cross-country skier, Gray? Is this one of your outdoorsman activities?
No, I have cross-country skied, and that is how I know I am not a cross-country skier. I was able to confirm quickly that I was not the guy, because when I hear skiing, I think downhill, and when I don't have it, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I need gravity. I need gravity.
So I am not sure exactly why, but my family was a family of cross-country skiers. And we, back in the day when Milwaukee County had plenty of snow in the wintertime, there were all kinds of groomed courses, even in and around Milwaukee County. And then often my family would take some trips up to the Door Peninsula and other Devil's Lake area and do more cross-country skiing. The longest I ever did was, I think, a 6 mile, which isn't all that long, but I was like 10 at the time, right? And this was an incredibly hilly course. And if you have never cross-country skied, it is a little bit of, it's not the most intuitive body movements, and there's all kinds of different ski strokes that you can use. People have all kinds of fun names for all of them. And especially when you're going up hills, which is really, truly a stinking workout. And the thing you figure out if you've gone cross-country skiing for more than 5 minutes is do not wear too many clothes, because you will be sweating. It is a freaking workout. And it was on this longer ski trip that we had done, or one of the routes that we had done on a trip, where it is. I blame my parents for my lifetime of terrible right ankle problems, because I absolutely destroyed my right ankle about a half a mile from the finish of the trail. And that was it. I was like 10. So I've been hobbling around on this busted ankle. I blame my parents. Thank you very much. But they gave me the love of cross-country skiing. So if you're not a cross-country skier, Gray, and I've been told, again, avid outdoorsman, what are some of your favorite outdoor activities up in your neck of the woods?
Well, the biggest one, I'm a fisherman. You can catch me. I'm a bank fisherman specifically, because I'm too broke to have a boat at the moment. But no, I don't have a spot to put a boat. But because of that, I'm a bank fisherman. So I've got a backpack and one rod that I try to use for everything that I possibly can, which is pretty awesome, because we've got a wide range of game fish, from things that you can barely feel on a heavy rod to things that you can't catch on a light rod. So trying to use one can be a little bit fun. Other than that, though, honestly, mushroom hunting. My girlfriend and I.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, yes. It's once you break past the don't touch any of them of mushrooms
mentality. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. Which, to be fair, I will say is the safe mentality. But also, the first thing you learn is that you can chew on any mushroom in the state and it probably won't affect you negatively. Like, there's a spit and taste. There's a right way to do it. Don't go eat mushrooms, people. I'm not saying that. But well, seriously, even the worst ones, you taste them to see what they are.
Are we going to get like some inadvertent psilocybin, whatever but trippy stuff? I joke, of course. I don't
probably
think
probably not.
Probably not. Okay, that's good. Great. Before we lose you, we got just a little bit, like 2 minutes left. I wanted to talk about this, the headgear of the Northwoods. You and I are big, big fans of a hat known as the Stormy Cromer. You have one on right now if you're watching on Civic Media's YouTube channel or at Maggie Dawn Show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. What is the Stormy Cromer, and why is it the best hat for the wintertime athletics?
Two great questions and one perfect answer. It's a hat that's designed to stay on your head when you're on the outside of a train. A guy by the name of George Cromer went by the name Stormy. He was a train conductor and frequently lost his hat. And so, well, George, and I'm glad we get the opportunity, because George's wife gets the credit. She made the hat. He complained about the problem. She fixed it. Let's just say that out loud. George's wife, and forgive me, I don't know Mrs. Cromer's name, but she invented a hat with this neat little flap that drops down below my ears. And in doing so, holds the hat more tightly to my head. And so it's confirmed I could wear this outside a train and I'd still have it after the ride.
And it is warm, warm, warm. They are fabulous. I was introduced to the Stormy Cromer, yay, lo, these many 5 years ago. And I am a convert. I now have two of them. I have a Stormy Cromer dog jacket for my tiny little dog, Finny. And we lean into the red plaid variety. You've got your sport in the green.
Green for me, sorry.
We'll have to quaff an adult beverage with our Stormy Cromers on sometime, Gray. And I can't wait to talk to you again about all things outdoors in Wisconsin. I appreciate your time, my friend. Folks, you're going to want to keep it locked. We got State Senator Sarah Kieski coming up. She's from District 4. She's going to tell us what her legislative priorities are for her first term in our state Senate. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Ready to go.
Get me to the start line. I'll be ready to go.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.